Here's a small, uncomfortable fact about the way we've been training AI agents to use tools. You take a strong language model, you ask it to invent a task, book me a flight, look up this domain, query that database. And then you ask the same model to write out the sequence of tool calls that would solve it. You collect millions of these. You feed them to a smaller model. You ship it. And the entire time, nobody has actually checked that any of those tool calls work against any real API anywhere.
The model is hallucinating both sides of the exam. It's inventing the question, inventing the answer, and there's no graders in the room.
Right. And the paper we're digging into today goes after exactly that problem with a move that, once you see it, is hard to unsee. It's called Firefly, illuminating large-scale verified tool call data generation from real APIs. It went up on Archive on May 17, 2026, and we're recording 3 days later. Quick ground rules before we get into it. This episode is AI-generated. The script is from Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7, and you're hearing two AI voices from 11 Labs. I'm Juniper, that's Finn, and the show isn't affiliated with either company. With that out of the way, the move Firefly makes is an inversion. Don't write a test and hope your student can solve it. Watch a student solve real problems, then write the test backward from what they did.
Back up one step for me, Juniper, because I want to make sure we land the problem before the fix. When you say tool calling, what's the actual thing the model is being trained to do?
Picture an assistant that doesn't just talk about booking a flight. It actually hits the airline's API. It emits a structured request. Function name, arguments, the whole envelope. The API answers. The model reads the answer and decides what to do next. Maybe call a second tool. Maybe combine outputs. Maybe answer the user. A trajectory is a chain of those calls, sometimes branching, sometimes feeding one tool's output into another's input. That's the skill. And to teach a model that skill, you need examples, thousands of them, of tasks paired with correct sequences of calls and correct final answers.
And the field's been trying to manufacture those examples synthetically, because humans are way too slow and expensive to write a million of them by hand.
Exactly. The standard recipe goes forward. A strong model invents a plausible-sounding user task. Then it writes the tool calls that would supposedly solve it. Fast, scalable, and quietly broken, because the tools might not exist the way the model imagined them. The arguments might be wrong, the API might respond completely differently than the model assumed, and the correct answer was never verified against anything that actually happened. You end up training on confident-looking fiction.
And the obvious alternative, just use real APIs and verify everything, runs into its own wall.
Real APIs change. Stock prices move. Search results drift. Servers go offline mid-training run. You cannot do reinforcement learning in an environment where the same call returns different things every time, or where your training data source vanishes during Epoch 4. So the question Firefly is trying to answer is, how do you get training data that's grounded in real APIs, verifiably correct, and stable enough to actually train against, all three at once?
Okay, so the inversion. Walk me through what they do differently.
They flip the order. Instead of generate, then execute, they execute, then generate. They take a strong model, Claude Sonnet 4.5 in their setup, and they set it loose on about 1,000 real tools across 240 real servers. And they tell it, just explore. Call tools. Chain outputs into inputs. Build little networks of real executions. Log every single call's input and output to a file. Don't worry about what task you're solving yet. Just produce real, working trajectories.
So at this point, there's no task at all. There's just a record of, I called tool A with these arguments, it returned this, then I fed that into tool B, which returned this.
A flowchart of recorded calls. That's the raw artifact. Then, only then, does the system go back and ask, given this trajectory I just observed, what natural language question would it answer? And it writes the question from the recorded outputs. The ground truth answer is just whatever the tools returned, read off the log. The trajectory was real, so the task is provably solvable. The answer came from observed outputs, so the label is correct by construction.
That's the move. Correctness isn't something you check after the fact. It's a property of how the data got made.
And there's a sentence in the paper that captures the whole thesis. This backchaining construction makes label correctness a property of the data generation process rather than a post-hoc filtering problem. Most synthetic data work treats validation as the last stage: generate, then filter. Firefly's inversion makes the filter unnecessary for the core label, because the label was extracted from a real execution.
Give me the concrete example, the one in the paper that makes this click.
This is my favorite one, Finn, because it's almost embarrassingly simple. There's a whois lookup tool. You give it a domain name, it gives you back the registration record. During exploration, the AI made two calls to that tool, one for Amazon.com, one for Netflix.com. The recorded outputs included registration years: 1994 for Amazon, 1997 for Netflix.
And then?
And then the system looks at those two recorded outputs and writes a task. The task is, which domain was registered first, Amazon.com or Netflix.com? And how many years apart were they registered? The answer is sitting right there in the log: Amazon, 1994. Netflix, 1997. 3 years apart. That's the example. Two real calls, two recorded outputs, and a question written backward from what the tools actually returned.
And the beauty is, there's no universe in which that label is wrong. You're not asking a language model to guess what whois would say. You ran whois. The answer is whatever whois said.
And that's the entire central insight of the paper compressed into one example. Everything else, and there's a lot of everything else, is engineering to make that work at scale.
Right, so let's go there. Because set a model loose on 1,000 tools sounds great in a sentence. But if you actually do that naively, 99% of the calls are going to be nonsense. You'd be passing weather forecasts into stock tickers, feeding image URLs into SQL queries. How do they keep the exploration from being mostly garbage?
This is your half of the episode, isn't it?
Probably. The piece that does the heavy lifting here is what the authors call a tool compatibility graph. And I think the cleanest way to picture it is as a recipe book. Imagine you've got 1,000 kitchen techniques: chopping, sauteing, whisking, deglazing. And for every pair of techniques, you want to know whether the output of one could plausibly become the input of the next. A whisked egg can go into a hot pan. A sauteed onion cannot be whisked. Most pairs don't compose. A few do. The recipe book is just a giant table of which technique can follow which.
And in Firefly's case, the recipe book is built by asking a language model, for every pair of tools, whether the output schema of tool A could realistically feed into the input schema of tool B.
With a confidence score. They run this judgment across all the pairs. They end up with about 83,000 directed edges in the graph, 64,000 of them at medium or higher confidence. Average of 88 plausible successors per tool. And, this matters, the edges cross server boundaries, which is why almost 40% of the final tasks end up requiring tools from multiple servers chained together.
So when the strong model is exploring, it isn't picking the next tool at random from 1,000 options. It's picking from the small neighborhood the graph says is plausible.
Right. It starts at some tool with at least 2 high-confidence successors, so the trajectory can branch. And then, at every step, it sees a random subset of compatible next tools. It can call multiple in parallel, chain one output into the next call's input, or combine outputs from earlier nodes. They run this until they hit a budget. The output is roughly 10,000 of these little execution graphs. Each one is a real working trajectory against real servers.
And then the backchaining happens on top of each graph. Pick a subset of nodes. Write a task whose answer can be read off those nodes' outputs. Treat the other nodes as distractors, so the model has to figure out which calls actually matter.
With one detail that's load-bearing for the training step later: every task comes with a structured answer schema, a little JSON template. Named fields like Amazon SynArt and a natural language answer template using those same fields. That structure is what makes binary rewards possible during RL, because you can do field-level exact matching instead of fuzzy text comparison.
After all that, an LLM judge filters out the tasks that aren't well specified. Anything ambiguous, anything where the answer isn't really determined by the trajectory, anything with opaque database IDs in the answer. About half the candidates fail. They end up with around 5,000 validated tasks.
5,144, if we're being precise, which is small compared to some other synthetic tool use datasets, but the pitch is every single one of these is verified against a real execution.
Okay, so now we have a dataset. We've got tasks, we've got ground truth trajectories, we've got structured answers. But we still can't just train against live APIs, because the APIs will drift and the training loop will break. So how do they actually run the reinforcement learning?
This is the third piece, and it's the part that I think is the cleverest engineering move in the paper, even though the inversion is the headline. They build a simulator. Picture a flight simulator versus a real plane. You don't train pilots on real planes because every flight has different weather and the consequences of mistakes are catastrophic. A flight simulator replays recorded conditions, so every trainee can fly the exact same approach to the exact same runway in the exact same crosswind, over and over.
And Firefly does the same thing for API calls.
Every call that was ever made during exploration sits in a cache. During RL training, the agent doesn't talk to the live servers, it talks to the simulator. The agent emits a call, function name, arguments, and the simulator checks. Do I have this exact call in my cache? If yes, replay the recorded response. If no, do I have something similar? If yes, improvise from the nearest historical examples. If neither, return an error.
And there's a number from the actual training run that I think tells you something important. When they ran the trained agent through the simulator, 42% of its calls were resolved by exact cache match, 58% by the fuzzy fallback, and 0% fell into the "I don't have any data for this" bucket.
Which is interesting in two directions. The authors present that 0% as evidence of coverage. The cache was complete enough that the agent never hit a wall. And that's a reasonable read. The skeptics' read, which we should also voice, is that the agent has learned to stay close to the training distribution. It's never trying anything genuinely novel. We'll come back to that.
With the simulator in place, the actual RL is almost the boring part. They use a method called GRPO. The only thing the listener needs to know about it is that the model attempts each task 8 times. The attempts that get the right answer get rewarded, and the parameters drift toward the strategies that worked. No critic network, no value function, just sibling attempts competing against each other.
And one nice touch. Once the model gets all 8 attempts right on a particular task, that task gets dropped from training. So the model spends its compute on the things it still finds hard.
300 training steps, batch size 16. Base model is Qwen3, 4 billion parameters, the thinking variant. And then, Finn, this is where you've been waiting to land your number, isn't it?
The 4 billion parameter model goes from 28.1% on the held out test set to 41.5% after RL training, which matches Claude Sonnet 4.6, which scores 42.2 on the same test. A 4 billion parameter open model tied with a flagship frontier model on a tool calling benchmark.
That's the headline. And at pass at 8, where the model gets 8 shots and you count it as solved if any of them works, the trained 4 billion model actually pulls ahead. 52.8 versus Sonnet's 50.3. It starts approaching Claude Opus.
Now, this is where I want to be careful because the headline number is real, but it deserves some scrutiny. Juniper, what's the catch on the in-distribution result?
The catch is the simulator. The Firefly test set is evaluated through the same simulator the model was trained against, and the simulator returns errors for calls that are far outside the cached region, which means the evaluation environment is, by design, very kind to behavior that stays inside the training distribution. The Claude baselines are evaluated under the same protocol, but Claude doesn't know which calls are in the cache and which aren't, So there's at least a structural reason to suspect the home field advantage is doing some work.
Which is why the transfer benchmarks are the more honest signal. They take the trained 4 billion model and they run it on benchmarks where the simulator isn't in the loop at all. Tau 2 Bench Retail, which is a multi-turn customer service environment, Tau 2 Bench Airline, some MCP mark file system and database tasks.
And the gains are real, but smaller. Tau 2 Bench Retail goes from 49% to about 63%. Airline from 36% to about 52%. MCP mark file system from 40% to 60%. Postgres Easy from 70% to 80%. These are genuine improvements on benchmarks the model never saw, evaluated against real environments. And they're particularly interesting because the Firefly training data is all single turn. One user message, then the model has to figure out the right multi-step tool sequence. The fact that it transfers to multi-turn dialogue benchmarks suggests it's learning something like real tool use skill, not just memorizing the training distribution.
Though a hard-nosed skeptic could still ask, how much of the transfer is genuine tool use competence versus learning to produce structured outputs in a particular format that happens to be rewarded across these benchmarks too? The paper doesn't fully separate those.
And on one of the transfer tasks, Tau 2 Bench Telecom, the improvement is essentially in the noise, 18.9 to 20.4. So it's not uniform.
There's a bigger structural worry I want to put on the table too, Juniper, because it's not in the headline critique, but I think it's the most interesting one. Nearly every quality decision in this entire pipeline is being made by a strong LLM judge. The edges in the tool compatibility graph, LLM judgment. The task validation step that filters half the candidates, LLM judgment. The simulator's fuzzy match fallback when there's no exact cache hit, LLM judgment. The reward signal when the structured field matching fails, LLM judgment.
It's LLM judges all the way down.
And none of those stages are independently validated against human annotation in the paper. The whole edifice rests on the assumption that Claude Sonnet 4.5, which is what's doing all that judging, is well calibrated across all these very different subjective tasks, which it might be. But it's an assumption the paper doesn't really stress test. And if it's wrong in subtle ways, the errors could be correlated in ways that are hard to detect from the inside.
It's a pipeline where the same family of model is generating, judging, exploring, and validating. The wins are real, but the foundation has a single point of philosophical failure.
The authors themselves flag two limitations directly. One is model scale. They only trained a 4 billion parameter model because of compute. The gap between PASSET 1 and PASSET 16 is modest, and they read that as evidence that the 4 billion model lacks the capacity to solve many of the harder tasks, even with multiple attempts. A bigger model would probably raise both numbers, but we don't get to see that experiment.
The second is single turn only. Every task in Firefly is a single user message. The multi-step structure is in the tool calls, not in the dialogue. Real tool use often involves the user clarifying, changing their mind mid-task, asking follow-ups. Extending this pipeline to multi-turn dialogues is genuinely open work.
Right. So with all those caveats stated honestly, what's left? What's the thing to actually take away?
Two things, I think. One is practical, one is conceptual. The practical thing is a price tag. The entire Firefly dataset cost about $47,000 to generate. 23.5 billion tokens through Claude Sonnet 4.5 on AWS Bedrock. That's a one-time spend for an artifact that lets you train a 4 billion parameter open model to a level that's at least in the conversation with a frontier proprietary model on tool calling. Compare that to the cost of human annotation at that scale, which would be staggeringly more and probably wouldn't produce data of equivalent verifiability. The dataset and simulator are released. So this is a meaningful shift in who can train a competitive agent.
And the conceptual thing?
The conceptual thing is the inversion itself. Correctness as a property of the generation process, not a filtering step. Once you see that move applied to tool calling, the same pattern almost certainly generalizes. Any agentic domain where actions can be executed and observed should be amenable to the same flip. Explore the environment, record what happens, then backchain a task whose answer is sitting in the recording.
The who is example is the version of that idea I keep coming back to. The reason the answer to which was registered first, Amazon or Netflix, is guaranteed to be correct isn't because someone checked it. It's because the answer was extracted from the actual who is call. Nobody had to verify it. Verification was structurally impossible to skip.
Right. Don't write a test and hope your student can solve it. Watch a student solve real problems and write the test backward from what they did.
There's a phrase in the paper I like for the simulator design too. The authors call the no data error tier conservative, and they defend it by arguing that calls far outside the cache trajectory are unlikely to be necessary for a correct solution and shouldn't be rewarded, which is a principled defense and also, as we said, the same property that makes the in-distribution number look generous. Both things can be true.
That's where I want to land it, actually. This is a paper where the central idea is genuinely clean, the kind of move that seems obvious in retrospect and a little embarrassing the field didn't do sooner. And the engineering around it is careful and clever, and the empirical result is striking. And there are real reasons to want to see it replicated at larger scale with independent evaluators before declaring victory. All of those are simultaneously true, and I think the episode is worth more if we hold all of them rather than picking one.
The paper's linked in the show notes along with some related reading if you want to keep pulling on this thread. And if you want the full transcript with the technical terms defined in line, plus the concept pages that connect this episode to other things we've covered on tool use and synthetic data, that all lives on paperdive.ai.
Thanks for listening to AI Papers, a deep dive.